You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Man's Life on Earth and in the Spiritual Worlds, given in 1922. This is Lecture 4, given in London on the 12th of November. My dear friends, you will remember that when last I spoke to you here, I described the experiences of the human soul during sleep. And today I should like, in a certain sense, to continue what I then said. It is true to say that a man whose knowledge of human life is limited to the day side knows only one half of human life, for by far the most important occurrences are those that happen during sleep. I need not explain to you how the knowledge of what I am going to speak today is acquired by means of that exact clairvoyance which I have described here in London too. I shall assume that you will take it for granted that what I am going to say is a result of this clairvoyant science. When man passes over from day consciousness into sleep consciousness, which for men of the present day is a state of unconsciousness, he is not within his physical and etheric bodies. During sleep he is a purely spiritual being. And from one aspect I described to you last time, what he, as this being of soul and spirit, experiences between the time of going to sleep and of waking. Today I shall take it from another point of view. You remember that man, in sleep, first experiences the penetration of his being into the universal ether, and that as a result of this, a certain fear overcomes him, a fear of the unknown, the indefinite, the undifferentiated. You will also remember that in that moment there awakens in the soul something that by an expression that is taken from consciousness can be named the longing for the divine. Then in the second stage of sleep, man experiences reflected images of the planetary movements. And then, for those who have developed relationship to the mystery of Golgotha, Christ appears as leader through the otherwise chaotic experiences which man has as he passes through the world of the reflected images of the stellar and planetary life in sleep. Then comes the experience of the world of the fixed stars. Man has passed out beyond the reflection of the planetary spheres, and he experiences the constellation of the fixed stars. So that from the time of going to sleep to the time of waking, man actually passes through the whole of extra-earthly cosmic existence. I told you, too, that the moon forces, or that which corresponds spiritually to the manifestations of lunar phenomena, bring man back again in the morning, or rather when he wakes up, to his physical and to his etheric bodies. I should like today to describe, from another side, the experience of man between the time of going to sleep and the time of waking. If we are not entangled in the materialistic conceptions of modern humanity, we have, during our day consciousness, a moral and a religious foundation to our life. Over and above his perceptions and cognition of nature, man must feel that he has moral obligations and responsibilities, and that his whole being rests in a spiritual world. We can call this a religious consciousness. Man has this moral and religious consciousness during the waking state. But he has this religious consciousness in his waking state only because he is within his physical body. Man is not alone in his physical body. Spirits of a higher world order are within him. He lives in his physical body with spirits of higher world orders. And in his etheric body, he lives with the purposes of these spirits of higher world orders in the moral sphere. The religious consciousness of man is dependent on his life in the physical body. The moral life is dependent on his life in the etheric body. And this draws our attention to the fact that the universal ether, out of which our etheric body is taken, has two parts. The one part of this universal ether is warmth, light, chemical ether, life ether. But at the basis of all this etheric element, which exists in warmth, in light, in chemical and life processes, lies a moral essence of the universal ether. This moral essence of the universal ether is, however, only present in the neighborhood of the stars and planets. So that when you live on the earth, you are, although you are not conscious of it by day, in the universal ether as a moral essence. And when you are moving through the universe, you are also in the universal ether in moral essence, when you are in the sphere of a star. Between the stars, the moral element is driven out by the between the stars, the moral element is driven out of the ether by the sunlight. The sunlight itself, not the sun, for the sun is a heavenly body, has within it the primary source of the moral ether for us as men. But in that the sun shines, it expels the moral essence of the ether through its light. And so when we look out into the world with our eyes, we see flowers, springs, and so on, without interweaving any moral element with it, because the sunlight kills for us the moral element. And when we go out of our physical and etheric bodies in sleep, we have, as men of souls and spirit, nothing more than what we have acquired during earth life through the beholding of nature. However paradoxical it may sound, we leave behind, with the physical and etheric body in bed, our moral and religious conceptions, and we live as non-moral beings between the time of going to sleep and the time of waking up. During this time, we are living in a world which is also irradiated by the light of the sun. And because the moral order of the universe is taken away from the ether, the spirit of Ahriman has access to this ether, into which we pass when we go to sleep. The spirit of Ahriman speaks to man during sleep, and what he says is terrible. Ahriman is rightly called the lying spirit, because he represents things to a sleeping man in such a way as to make the good seem evil and the evil good. There has recently appeared in the newspapers a notice of something that natural science too has investigated. The question has arisen as to why criminals enjoy such good sleep, while moral men, possessed of a good conscience, often have bad sleep. This is explained by what I am telling you. Into the soul of a man possessed of a strongly developed conscience, a morally sensitive man, the moral sense enters so deeply that he takes it with him over into sleep, and then he sleeps badly, if he thinks that he has done wrong. But a bad man with no highly developed moral conscience takes no stings of conscience with him into sleep, and then he has a pure spiritual ear for the whisperings and insinuations of Ahriman, who represents to him the good as evil. For this reason the criminal is so contented in sleep. Men may say that it is surely unjust for criminals to sleep well and for good men to sleep badly, a fact which has been discovered by modern natural science. The reason is as I have told you. The temptation to evil during the sleeping state is terribly strong, and it is easy for man to bring with him from sleep demoniacal powers of corruption. It is only when man returns into his physical and etheric bodies that the stings of conscience wake up again in one who is not particularly good. It is a fact, then, that man as a being of the earth is exposed during his sleeping life to every kind of possibility of falling victim to Ahriman. But it has taken time for this temptation to become as strong as it is at the present day. Our age is the first wherein men are subject in this high degree during sleep to the demoniac powers who represent evil to them as good while they are asleep. This was not the case in more ancient times of human evolution. In more ancient times, as I have so often said, men had not such a strong ego consciousness as he has today. During waking life, his ego consciousness was weaker, and the result of this was that during sleep, he did not ally himself with the evil to such an extent as he now does. The present age is a critical one for human evolution. Men must arm themselves against the powers of evils which are approaching them. Men of more ancient times were protected, because when they slept, they entered more into the group soul. Man lived in the group soul during sleep. We live this group soul life to a certain extent still during our waking state. We feel ourselves as a people, and indeed often as a stock. We feel ourselves, if we have an aristocratic sense, as members of a family. But today, sleep entirely takes away from man this group soul feeling. During sleep, today, a man can no longer be a good aristocrat. Sleep leads us to a far greater extent than you would imagine, on the one side to the evil, and on the other side to democracy. Sleep is a great teacher. Men of ancient times, when they slept, passed over into the group soul, and when they woke up, returning again to the physical and etheric bodies, they brought with them a vivid consciousness of connection with their group soul. That is one aspect of man's existence during sleep. But what man has during sleep is, in this present age, open to the evil he has in himself as well. But he must, during waking life, allow it to be imbued with moral and with religious consciousness. The religious consciousness is given him by powers existing in the physical body, and the moral by powers existing in the etheric body. Now, just as man of ancient times, all this has become different in the evolution of humanity since the mystery of Golgotha, lived during sleep with a strong group consciousness. So, when he dipped down again on waking up into his physical and etheric bodies, he lived more within himself. But there again is a difference between ancient and modern man. Ancient man, when he woke up and dipped down into his physical and etheric bodies, before he was quite awake, had a clear consciousness of his life before he descended to the earth. This was also the case before he went to sleep. Whereas man of ancient times had on the one side a strong group consciousness, he had also a strong consciousness of his connection with life beyond the earth. He knew how he had descended from out of the spiritual world, had passed through the world of the stars, and had actually chosen out a physical body here on the earth. Later this consciousness became darker, and in exchange for this, men became clever in the modern sense. They were permeated with the power of judgment, with discrimination, and things of that kind. This arose in the course of evolution, and we can, for this reason, form judgments so well in the morning, because our physical body gives us the power of judgment. We penetrate more deeply into our physical and etheric bodies than was the case with man of ancient times. Ancient man had a consciousness of preceding existence. We have a more vivid consciousness of earthly existence. We place ourselves firmly within our physical and etheric bodies, whereas man of ancient times did not do so. He carried his physical and etheric bodies about with him, as it were, feeling them in a sense as something external, rather as we today think of our clothes. We have no longer such a feeling. We no longer say, as men of ancient times would have done when they passed through a door, "I carry my being through the door," by which he meant his physical being. In ancient languages, this was an absolutely natural way of speaking. We should say today, "I pass through the door," because we press our ego, our I, capital, firmly down into the physical body. It is quite natural for us to speak in this way. Now, because of this, man has lost the consciousness of his connection with the spiritual world and with the world of the stars. Man of earlier times knew that he was still connected with the world of the stars, and behind the world of the stars with the spiritual world, and had descended from out of these worlds to earthly existence. Man of modern times says, quote, I need in life meat, vegetables, eggs. These are all products of the physical world with which I am concerned from birth to death. Close quote. Do not think that I am speaking contemptuously about these things, for they are all very good and they belong to life. This should be recognized in its whole significance. All that I want to express is that man of ancient times knew that in life he needed not only the forces of the earth that exist in cattle, in cabbage, and in eggs, but that he needed for his life the forces of Jupiter, Venus, and Saturn. He said to himself, as here on the earth I have to eat eggs, so when I am descending to earth, I must take into myself the force of Jupiter and of Venus, for otherwise I simply could not be an earthman. Close quote. So there was a quote in there, missed the quotation mark. Okay. Man of the present day feels himself bound to the earth, having care as to what he eats in order that he may have a healthy body. Man of ancient times felt himself to have a relationship to the stars, and he said to himself, quote, if here on the earth I am not able to do this or that, I have not acted rightly to the stars on my descent, and I must correct that when I next pass through the world of the stars during the time between death and a new birth. Close quote. In olden times, then, man developed what we may call a spiritual diet for his life. In the ancient mysteries, there were leaders and teachers whose functions were somewhat similar to those of modern doctors. But modern doctors only give advice about the body. That is quite understandable, and no reproach is implied. But the ancient leaders in the mysteries, who in this sense were also doctors, gave advice as to how, when a man was suffering from this or that infirmity, he should correct his relationship to Venus or to Saturn. They gave certain advice about the soul to the people. Suppose, for instance, such a doctor in the mysteries found that a man who came to him to be healed had too strong an attraction for his physical body, that his physical body was not merely a kind of clothing, but he lived too intensely within it, rather like a man of modern times, if he were always to sleep in his clothes. Such a man might come to a doctor in the mysteries, suffering from a certain infirmity which bound him tightly to his physical body. Then the doctor would say to the suffering man, when the evening of the full moon arrives, try to go out, as it were, into the full moon, saying a mantram while you go out. Why did the doctor in the ancient mysteries do this? He did it because he knew that when man passed out into the moonlight and said certain mantrams, this worked against the Saturn force. Saturn will have less power over such a man. The doctor knew that the cause of this hold on the physical body, this absolute fixation in the physical body, was that such a man had clung too intensely to Saturn when he passed into earthly existence from the spiritual world, from the world of the stars. The infirmity of such a man came from too strong a sympathy with a Saturn existence. The moon and Saturn are two heavenly bodies that have a counteracting effect upon each other. An ancient doctor cured the ills of the Saturn forces through the forces of the moon. He gave a spiritual diet in those ancient times. We have a physical diet that is quite suited to us. But in olden times, man needed a spiritual diet, and we have to learn how to add this spiritual diet to our physical diet. The task of the present day is for us again to acquire a sense of the necessity for a spiritual as well as a physical diet. And then we shall be able to fulfill our tasks in reference to the present age of earth life. I am very glad that I am still able to give two more lectures to you, so there is no need today to hurry as much as would otherwise have been necessary. I shall therefore be able to tell you quietly something of what I would like to say during my presence here. Man of ancient times was able, by his elementary clairvoyance, to look back to the pre-earthly life which he passed through in the spiritual world, before he united himself to a physical and etheric body here on the earth. This can today only be attained through real spiritual science, such as we strive after in anthroposophy. Through the vision of inspired consciousness of the time, we pass through, through the vision of inspired consciousness of the time we passed through before we descended to the earth, it becomes evident how we have lived for a period in a purely spiritual world, where there are no mineral, vegetable, and animal worlds, where, at first, there are no stars, such as we see around the earth, but where there are around us the beings of the higher hierarchies. For a time, then, between death and a new birth, we live among spiritual beings. Then, after that, we pass through the world of the stars, down to the earth, and we pass through the one or the other stellar sphere with greater or with lesser sympathy. And here it is true that we really prepare our earthly existence. According to the manner of our relationship to the stellar spheres through which we pass, so is our earthly existence. I should like to illustrate this to you by example. When we emerge from the purely spiritual world, we pass in the first place through the sphere of the fixed stars. Of this I shall speak next time and not today. Then we pass through the Saturn sphere, Jupiter sphere, Mars sphere, Sun sphere, Mercury sphere, Venus sphere, Moon sphere, and gradually descend to the earth. From this you will see that as we enter the sphere of the stars, from out of the purely spiritual world, we approach the stars to a certain extent from the other side. When we stand here on the earth, we see, for instance, Jupiter from a certain side. When a human being, descending from the spiritual world to the sphere of the stars, in his approach to the earth, sees, for example, Saturn, he sees it from the other side. It is the same with all the stars. The being approaches the star from behind and beyond it, to a certain extent, and sees the antithesis of what men see physically on the earth. The human being that approaches the earth from the spiritual world does not see in the same way as we do. As yet this being has no eyes, for eyes are not through the physical body. For eyes are got through the physical body. The being sees the spiritual Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, Sun, the spiritual Venus, Mercury, and Moon. It follows from this that the being, according to the sympathy with which it passes through these different spheres, must, at its descent, take up the forces of these spheres, the forces of Saturn, Jupiter, and so forth. It may happen that a human being, who in a previous earth incarnation lived a certain life, gets the impression during the descent to a new life that it will be good for it if next time it descends to earth as a woman, incarnates in a female body. It is actually a matter of consideration for the descending soul whether it will become a man or a woman. For the most essential part of destiny on the earth naturally depends on this. It is not a matter of indifference whether one passes one's existence as a man or as a woman in an earth life, but it is not enough for the human soul simply to decide, I will be a man or a woman. There has to be preparation. And the preparation is that when the soul wishes to become a woman, it approaches the earth when we, from the earth, see the moon as full moon. When we, from the earth, see the moon as full moon, then the human soul sees the spiritual part of the moon. When it comes out of the spiritual spheres, it sees it as dark, that is to say, endowed with a specific quality. It sees the moon spiritually. And this quality, this nature, prepares the soul in such a way that on the earth it obtains the force attracting it to a female body. whether the soul takes up into itself the forces for a male or female incarnation is therefore dependent upon the way in which it passes through the sphere of the stars. The soul passes then through the moon's sphere, and it passes also through the spheres of Mercury and Venus. When the soul becomes a man or a woman through the moon's sphere, it could become a man or a woman in one family or another, but through its sympathy in the Venus sphere, it is equipped for the particular family it will enter. It may be that a human being, descending as a soul to the earth, comes down at a time when Venus is on the other side of the earth, at a time when he does not need to pass through the Venus sphere. And when that happens, he will be a man who does not cling very closely to his family, or he will pass by Venus in one way or another, and will choose, in his transit, the path which guides him to one particular family. The soul then has the possibility of preparing itself for incarnation in a particular family, where it chooses the ray, as it were, that proceeds from Venus to that particular family. Then he approaches the earth from the other side, the dark side of Venus, and so reaches a particular family. The same thing happens in regard to the Mercury sphere, or according to its relation to the Mercury sphere, the soul comes to a particular people. So again, when the region inhabited by this people is shown upon by the Mercury rays, and the soul comes from beyond to the dark side of Mercury, this is the path to this particular people. Human souls then are prepared by the moon, and we always mean in this connection the spiritual moon, to become either men or women. By Venus, man is prepared to belong to his particular family. By Mercury, to a particular people or race. These things will show you how the whole life of man on the earth is dependent on the way he fashions his conditions during the descent to the earth. This is what we must gain knowledge of once again. We must, in fact, again, come to feel ourselves just as much creatures of the world of stars as on the earth we feel ourselves just as much creatures of hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, carbon, sulfur, and so on. We are not really physical man, put together from albumen and certain other substances, but we are men constituted out of all the forces of the universe. Because these forces work upon us during our descent to the earth, we have them in us then, and we have a certain remembrance of this in sleep. But as you know, the remembrance is always weaker than the experience. Just think, when you have the experience of the death of someone dear, how that grows weaker after a certain time. In the same way, living experience of existence in the spiritual and stellar world is fainter in sleep. Hence, man in sleep is exposed to all that I spoke of at the beginning of today's address. In sleep, we have only a faint reflection, a kind of cosmic remembrance or memory of our spiritual and stellar experience between death and birth. I wanted just to introduce these things today, and they shall be continued when we meet next time. The end of Lecture 4.